Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. It's certainly been clear in our area in recent months that there are a lot of disputes that could use mediation. We'll talk about one program to do just that in just a moment. But first, a St. Louis woman finds herself the appointed member of two important fact-finding entities related to the summer disturbances in Ferguson. Brittany Packnett is executive director of Teach for America St. Louis. While that is a full-time job, she is also a member of the Ferguson Commission appointed by Governor Nixon and President Obama's Task Force on 21st Century Policing. She joins me in studio. Brittany, so nice to see you again.
Nice to see you as well. Thanks for having me.
You have a very full plate, young lady. Three jobs, really.
Indeed, but important work, and I feel very privileged to be a part of it.
Tell me something about the process with regard to the task force. I know you've bounced all over the country gathering information. How is it all structured?
Yeah, so we did a series of 1 to 2 day public listening sessions, hearing from everyone from law enforcement to youth leadership and community leadership and different academics in the field of law enforcement and criminal justice, because we were really looking at policing as a whole and how we can take policing into the 21st century in such a way that it really does embody public trust and legitimacy as it works to reduce crime and build communities. And so we had those public listening sessions everywhere from Cincinnati and Phoenix to Washington, D.C., and really heard lots of voices. I think for me, the most important parts were the ways that we engaged the public. So we had lots of commentary on Twitter and via social media. We also had public comment sections at the end of each one of these. And twice when we were in Washington, D.C., we had a mother come. Her name is Miss Comfort from Upper Marlboro, Maryland. And she talked about her son, who she lost to a police-involved shooting. And she came twice to make sure that we didn't forget his name and that we remembered the task at hand and that we really all were clear on why we were there.
Your background is, of course, is in education. Was there anything that really surprised you, or has there been anything that's really surprised you during these sessions?
Well, I think one of the things that has been encouraging is how many people are coming to the table with real ideas and not just there to kind of be combative or to say, this is my side and this is why I don't agree with you, but to really say, here's a solution I have given my area of expertise. And if that's someone from the NAACP Legal Defense Fund or someone who themselves has dealt with stop and frisk policies in New York City or someone who's a retired sheriff, right? We need to hear from all of those people to actually figure out a way forward. I was certainly, I think, surprised by the amount of data that is missing about this, which is why these kind of fact-finding commissions and organizations, as you discussed, are so critically important. Right? We can't actually tell an accurate story about what's happening if there's not data. I'm very thankful to, you know, community folks and protesters who have taken some of that fact-finding on themselves. And so websites like mappingpoliceviolence.org actually have helped to paint the story of what police violence across the country looked like just last year against people of color in particular. But we certainly need to collect relevant data and clear data from all around the country.
There is no central clearinghouse for law enforcement for compiling these statistics in one special place.
Not currently. And I was quite surprised to find that out.
That's likely to change. You think that's going to be one of the recommendations?
Well, it was certainly one of our recommendations coming out of the task force. And there are so many different kinds of data that are important, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to be tracking how people are treated in their own communities by law enforcement, especially people in marginalized groups. So certainly Black people, people of color all over this nation, but also people who may have a religious difference than the majority of the country, or LGBTQ people and how they're treated. We also need to make sure that we're accurately tracking the kinds of records that police officers have as they move throughout the country, as they move from department to department. Certainly with all of our small municipalities here, that could be a very effective and helpful tool for us.
You've already made, as a group, a series of recommendations. Does that mean that your work is done?
It's certainly not done. You know, we made recommendations that had to do with dealing with policing and mass demonstrations and really prioritizing de-escalation and demilitarization to restorative justice in schools. So certainly a very broad scope of topics that we talked about inside of the world of policing, which means that all of us on that task force, everyone that we had the privilege to hear as witnesses, and all of the people who care deeply about this issue have a responsibility to take that report and use it as leverage in our own communities. You know, the executive order actually says that we will kind of dismantle 30 days after the president requests the final report. And I know that this is deeply important to him personally and his administration. So I think that we'll hear about some next steps from them soon, but we certainly have work to do right here at home.
A lot of people feel that given all that's been going on for the last months, and actually for the last good many years, mm-hmm. that law enforcement has been demonized. Do you get the sense that that, in fact, has happened?
Well, I think there can always be difficulty that comes when we finally have honest conversations about what's happening in our communities, because oftentimes we can sweep things under the rug, right? And that has to do with us prioritizing our own comfort. I think that there are incredibly difficult jobs in our community. But I work, as you said earlier, in education. And so I actually train teachers by trade. And when I think about the responsibility that someone holds when they stand in front of a classroom of young people and have the ability to mold their mind, that's really a life or death kind of opportunity. And so there is a greater amount of responsibility and a higher standard that I believe we should be holding educators to. And I've been blessed to meet educators of all stripes who meet and exceed those standards every single day. I think the same has to be true of policing.
You know, it occurs to me that there has not been much emphasis on education. And what we've heard so far from the Ferguson Commission in the DOJ, Department of Justice report, and, of course, the recommendations that the task force has made. That kind of surprises me, or have I missed something? It seems to me it's an important ingredient on all levels.
It's absolutely a central ingredient, especially when I think about some of the 20,000 students that Teach for America St. Louis serves in our classrooms. Oftentimes, their first and primary interactions with law enforcement are inside of schools. And so the first time I actually got to talk to the president, I mentioned the fact that in Ferguson, and I was standing on West Florissant peacefully demonstrating and was actually tear gassed for the first time next to an eighth grader. So this is directly affecting students. And we've seen so many incredible young leaders decide to actually take action inside and outside of their schools to make sure that their voices are heard. So certainly schooling and education has to be on the table. The Ferguson Commission has actually hosted two education and youth focused events. One was our education themed meeting at Westview Middle School in Riverview Gardens, where a number of students in the affected areas go to school. But we also had a youth speak, which I thought was a really, really powerful event. So we went to Florissant Valley Community College during the morning on a Saturday, fed everyone Ferguson Burger Bar and some pizza. But we really only handed the microphone to people ages 14 through 24. And in order to prioritize young voices, and those are the folks that are really the most affected by this topic that we're talking about, in order to prioritize their voices, it was necessary to actually just respectfully ask everyone else to be quiet and to give young people that time. And so we heard a lot of really I think thoughtful and productive suggestions from young people in particular about how they can be empowered inside of their schools to be able to take on this kind of work.
How important are the voices of young people in today's environment?
I think they're critical. I mean, they are the reason why I'm got into education work in the first place. They're the reason why on August 10th I went out to the Ferguson Police Department to pray with so many other members of the community. They're the reason why I continue to go out there. And I think that if we are serious about handing them a future in which they are not only empowered as learners, but empowered as leaders, and that they're alive to go and lead in the way that they are uniquely positioned to do so, we have to listen to them. Answering questions for them and on their behalf without actually seeking out their truth is just not the way that we need to move forward. That's been the status quo thus far, and it's no longer satisfactory.
Is there a generational divide, do you think, in the way older people think and today's young people are thinking?
I think that's a question we ask during every social movement, right? Because the music of one generation is not the music of the next. The communications of one generation are not the communications of the next. You know, I was in Selma a couple of weekends ago, and I had the incredible honor to walk across that same bridge that Diane Nash and John Lewis and so many others walked across to fight for freedoms that I now hold very dear. And I thought to myself, you know, what would that have looked like if they had Twitter, right? What would have been better? What would have been different? What could have been a real challenge? And so certainly there are generational differences. I think, though, that the narrative of framing those as differences and not necessarily divides is what's most productive. And I think that as long as we are listening to young people and following their lead in a way that doesn't condescend them, we can actually make some real progress.
Let me ask you your own question. What would it have been like if they had had Twitter and Facebook?
You know, I don't know. I think when I think about their ability to build community without the force of the internet, right, that I think is a real relationship building skill that sometimes my generation can skip over. But I think I've had a real pleasure to learn how to build relationships with people virtually in a way that I just never would have been able to without Twitter. I also think that, you know, when I think about that Bloody Sunday on Selma and the importance to which those news cameras that actually took that struggle into American homes on that Sunday was, I think that that is similar to the power of Twitter that we see right now, that the whole world paid attention to what's happening in Ferguson because of it.
I think it's easier to answer the question, what would have happened had those cameras not been there, than it is to answer the other question about social media. Yeah. Do you think that there is any conflict between your role as a participant in demonstrations and your role on the commission and the task force?
I don't think that there's a conflict there, because I think that one has to very clearly inform the other. I will never be silent about what happened to us on those nights. I will never not stand up for our young people. And they can't lead if they're not alive to do so. They can't learn if they're not alive to do so. And so this topic, this work of justice for young people and justice for marginalized people will always, always be a part of me and always be something that I will stand for. And I think that those are the kinds of voices that we also need in the halls of power. We can't separate, you know, direct action and peaceful disruptive action from systemic action. It's going to take both to really make progress here. And so we need diverse voices, including those that have been out peacefully on the streets to make that happen.
Are you finding much in the way of overlap between what you're finding out during your task force sessions and the Ferguson Commission sessions?
Certainly. I think one of the really relevant things is how much this is really an entire system that continues to be just frankly unjust for certain people, right? And so it's not just about policing. It's also about laws, right? It's also about how our municipal court systems are set up. And when I think about this narrative that has grown, that it's about bad apples or bad actors, that actually, in my opinion, really absolves us of having to pay attention to our systems and our structures that people are interacting with every single day. And so in order to actually be making systemic change, we have to be willing to take a magnifying glass to how our systems are truly affecting and impacting people every single day. And those are all deeply tied to one another.
A lot of people are learning how the system works today for the first time, but the system's been mm-hmm. working this way, if you will, for a great many years with people unconscious.
That's right.
That's right.
And also being unconscious of how interconnected housing and education is to poverty, is to employment, is to how a community is policed and fined. And so actually, I appreciate that the charge of the Ferguson Commission isn't really just a charge about Ferguson at all. It is about how all of these systems and structures work together mm-hmm. and how we can make them just for everyone.
Are you confident that when all is said and done, that there will be something you can point to and say, well, this changed things? In other words, will recommendations be acted upon?
You know, I am supremely hopeful that they will be. But I continue to not just put my hope in the political and kind of policy process. I just also continue to put my hope in people. Through the Ferguson Commission process, I've had the opportunity to meet a young man named Clifton Kinney. And Clifton is a senior at Luther North High School. He went to Hazelwood schools prior to then and had a number of Teach for America teachers, and has talked about how many teachers from all walks of life have been so incredibly impactful in his decision to be out there in the streets of Ferguson, making his voice heard, peacefully demonstrating, and it has really transformed his own leadership. And so I have a lot of hope in the policy process here, but I have a lot of hope and faith in people like Clifton.
I want to pick up on that point when we come back. Brittany Pagnett, we have to take a break. We'll do that now. Brittany, as I'm sure most of you know, is the executive director of Teach for America St. Louis, but she has much more on her plate, as I mentioned earlier. Aside from that, she's a member of the Ferguson Commission, appointed by Governor Nixon, and also was appointed by President Obama to serve in his task force on 21st century policing. We'll come back and continue our conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. 382-8255 is our number. You can also email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation with Brittany Packnett, Executive Director of Teach for America St. Louis, but also a member of the Ferguson Commission and President Obama's Task Force on 21st Century Policing. We'll continue that conversation in a moment, but first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The Metropolitan Sewer District will begin a series of community meetings tonight to explain its proposed rate increase. The district hopes the proposed hike would fund $1.5 billion for capital improvements. And the East St. Louis mayoral election is heating up. Incumbent Alvin Parks is touting his record on economic development, while challenger Emeka Jackson Hicks says she wants to return transparency to the mayor's office. Another candidate, real estate broker Courtney Hoffman, says he wants to generate municipal revenue by allowing nightclubs to stay open late. Earlier this week, the Illinois Supreme Court struck Parks' name from the ballot because he lacked the required number of signatures in his candidacy filing. He's running now as a write-in candidate. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Brittany Packnett. Brittany, one of the things you mentioned this before we went on the air is with regard to the president's task force. There's a political process that will follow. You alluded to that moments ago, a political process that will follow the recommendations, final recommendations. But the political environment in Washington, this polarization there, seems like it could be a stumbling block. Do you see it that way?
You know, it certainly presents a challenge. But I had the great privilege of working on Capitol Hill a few years ago for our local congressman, Congressman Clay, and have become very familiar with both the opportunities that are presented in the policy and political process, but also the limitations. And so when I think about the power of what we have before us, I think about how many people are engaging kind of in their full personal expression of their own democracy for the first time ever, or that they've got a renewed sense of that democracy. And so, you know, I'm certainly hoping to see real progress at the federal level, but I'm also going to be working with the Ferguson Commission and so many other activists in this community and around the country have taken those recommendations and said, how can we leverage these locally? How can we put the pressure on with our local elected officials, hold our local departments accountable in order to see these things come to fruition?
Would you anticipate that new law is going to be necessary on both fields, both Missouri, the statewide level and local level here, and the national level?
I would suspect so. You know, I think statutory change is necessary in order to give people the opportunity to provide accountability, right? Mm-hmm. And so changing our laws is absolutely necessary, but there are lots of levels at which that legal process happens, right? Federal, state, local, municipalities, and then also the policies and procedures, right? The actual regulations that are built by departments in accordance to those laws, right? So there's accountability measures that have to occur kind of throughout that work.
Yeah. We have some callers. I'd like to get to them as quickly as I can because our time is somewhat limited. But let's begin that process with Philip, who is calling from St. Louis. Philip, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Brittany Packnett.
Hi. I'm employed as the municipal defender for the St. Louis County Municipal Court System. That's the three satellite courts, west, south, and north. I was concerned because all the conversation about Ferguson is directed toward, for the most part, the tickets, the judges, and the prosecutors. And my concern is that we're missing the biggest offender in it of all, and that's that many of the mayors and court clerks are actually running those courts, and that the fine schedules are established by those two people, the mayors and the court clerks, and that things like warrant issuances and docketing, that's all done, has nothing to do with the judge or the prosecutor. And then in addition to that, the fact that everything started, I guess, in Ferguson kind of left out some of the worst offenders, because as far as fine schedules and other things that have been mentioned, Ferguson is probably not the worst. There are some out here that are outrageous when it comes to fines, and some of them that are outrageous when people miss court and warrants are issued what they expect in terms of bonds. So I just concerned that the focus might be misdirected because of the power and impact of what happened last summer in Ferguson and the protests.
Let, and that, Let's get a response. We have a time limitation here, and I think Brittany would like to respond to your comment. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, Philip, I appreciate your call. I think there are two quick things that I want to focus on that I think I heard you say. One is about this idea that this is not just about Ferguson, and I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly. Certainly the DOJ report focused on that, and that is what the world's attention has been paid to. But what we've heard as we've, you know, continued to interact with communities, and I myself and am a native of St. Louis County and still live there, is that they've borne witness to the fact that this is not just about Ferguson, and that these experiences have been had across several municipalities. And so making sure that we do not lose those very important stories that people have willingly volunteered to give to the Ferguson Commission and other bodies will be really critical moving forward, and that our responses really are not just about Ferguson, but about the broader region. I think secondly, though, you talk about this issue of responsibility, and that's exactly why I think it's so important to talk about systems and structures. Because there are many people in many positions who propagate that, right? And so there are people in all of the positions that you just named. There are also those of us who vote, who have a hand in how these systems and structures continue, right? And so if we want to see a shift in that, we have to make sure that we are having a conversation about all of the parties involved, because everyone is implicated in the status quo, and therefore everyone needs to be involved in progress.
Has there been any discussion, would be on the Ferguson Commission level, with regard to the issue of consolidation? I mean, it keeps coming up, the fact that we've got so many disparate municipalities, different laws, different fines, different procedures, and coziness amongst prosecutors and lawyers. Any discussion along those lines?
The discussion is certainly being had. I think we would be very careful, though, not to get attached to one single solution, right? What I have come to be clear on is that, as the last caller actually just alluded to, it's not just one system or one person or one elected official that has created the kind of situation that we're in. And so we can't have a single solution to get out of this thing. You know, I look at back in the work of education, there are lots of arguments for kind of very large, massive, unified school districts, and there are arguments for smaller school districts. There are pros and cons to both of those. And so I think we would do well at the commission and beyond to really have a very nuanced conversation about the broad policy change that needs to take place.
We had Commission Co-Chair Starsky Wilson on last week, and he indicated that you're going to be ready and finished probably before the September deadline that the governor had suggested.
Yes. Starsky and Rich and honestly the entire commission are feeling very, very urgent about making sure that we move quickly, right? People are really, really suffering under these systems, and we can't waste time in order to bring them some justice. Okay.
Let's take another call. Jeremy joins us from University City. Go ahead, Jeremy. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you guys doing today?
Great.
I'm glad you're involved. She's involved in so many things, and the teaching that she's doing. Just overall, I want to say that, you know, what we really need to do is have a paradigm shift, if you will, from this money and greed to knowledge as a society. And if we treat every child as a seed and educate them and teach them to learn and to think, as opposed to teach them to do, which they do now for jobs that are really no longer in existence. You know, I think there's more than one way that we can teach these children, and we've got a bunch of professional educators up there that can figure out that each child learns differently. So why don't we work on different methods instead of using one way to teach everybody the same way that's not getting, you know, people who really learn and think.
Jeremy, thanks for the call.
Sure. And I think, Jeremy, what you're saying is relevant to this topic of policing in communities of color, right? Because what you're really talking about is a fundamental issue of humanity. And if we look at every single child as if they're our own, if we look at every single child and recognize the inherent humanity that every single one of them walks around the earth with, especially those of our children in marginalized communities, we can treat them with that expectation of excellence, but also the love that will be required to ensure that we don't see these kinds of problems in schools or in our communities more broadly ever again.
And he hit the other big component here, and that is jobs. The economic situation is a huge part of all of this.
That's right.
Yeah. Back to the phones. We'll bring in Gwen calling from St. Louis County. Gwen, go ahead. You're on the air.
I first want to appreciate Ms. Packnett for all she's been doing.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Sincerely. Second, I want to ask that you add another system that needs fixing desperately. It's important, and that is transportation. transportation's needed for jobs, for schools, for economic development. Mm-hmm. And MoDOT has been underserved. I'm talking hundreds of millions of dollars in urban communities. We have been underserved in urban areas for decades. Brookings Institute said back in 2003, named us urban donors because we don't get back to anywhere near the taxes we pay.
Gwen, let's have a response to that, Gwen. Go ahead, Brittany.
Thanks so much for your comment, Gwen. And, I think you're absolutely right, because what you're talking about fundamentally is an issue of equity. And so any system that people interact with, whether it's daily, weekly, monthly, needs to be a system that is built on and based on equity for all people, including people who may be economically or racially marginalized in our society. And so if we actually approach the buildings of all of our systems, transportation included, to recognize that how it affects one will affect all of us. And if we actually have that kind of collective responsibility when we look at how we structure our systems, I think we can see some progress. But you're absolutely right. All of our systems are tied up in this system of inequity.
You know, looking back into the development of Metrolink, it really was a real hint, a real signal, mm-hmm. what racial attitudes were at that particular time, because people were saying, I don't want them coming out here. Don't bring Metrolink to my area.
That's right. And it is reminiscent of the kind of housing covenants that we saw in St. Louis, right? Even the existence of so many of these small county municipalities came because of the white flight and the urban sprawl that we've seen in St. Louis because of some of those same attitudes. It's a history that we work really hard to teach our teachers, because we want them to have that perspective when they walk into the classroom to know that these systems of inequity are all connected with each other and that they were built this way.
And a lot of people saw it but didn't act upon it.
That's
or react
right.
to it. Let's bring in Dan, calling from Alton. Dan, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Okay, that's Dan. My comment is that I'm a civil rights activist / militant from the 60s. And my comment is, we went through this before and it never changed. And my opinion is that the entire criminal justice system needs to be reformed to the same extent that they reform health care. You know, examples like the power that prosecutors have to prosecute or not prosecute, they have too much power. And my other thing is, please give me the time of this meeting that this young lady's having, because I would really like to meet with her.
So let me answer your second question first, Dan. Thanks so much for calling in. We have several working groups on the Ferguson Commission, as well as full commission meetings, all of which are open to the public. You can find the schedule that's always publicly posted at stlpositivechange.org. We have a working group on policing that will meet next Monday from 5 to 6:30 rather, at the University of Missouri St. Louis in the J.C. Penney building. And then on Wednesday, we will have our full commission meeting, and the location is on the website. So would absolutely love for you to come and contribute ideas. And Don, it's really been regular people like Dan and people from all backgrounds that have been consistently coming to these meetings and providing so many great ideas. I think in terms of your comment about reforming the entire criminal justice system, I think the work of people like Michelle Alexander and my incredible colleague on the task force, Brian Stevenson, from the Equal Justice Initiative in Alabama, would absolutely agree with you, and I would as well. Again, these systems all work together, and this movement is not about doing harm to people. It's about doing harm to systems that continue to do harm to people, and actually dismantling those and replacing them with systems of equity and justice for all people. And so I think the criminal justice system certainly fits in that boat.
You know, it occurs to me, and I've said this before, that there, you know, with as horrible as the Ferguson situation has been, there could be a silver lining here in the fact that change can be the ultimate outcome.
Yeah, you know, and I told you about Clifton earlier, and there are so many people that I've gotten to know through these last 7 months, over 200 days of this work. And those folks give me absolute hope, right? They are coming to the table every single day, hungry to make progress, to see St. Louis, the city that we love and believe in, be the city that we know it can be. And so with that kind of inspiration and that kind of passion, I really am hopeful that we can see real progress in our region.
Let's take one final call as time gets away from us. It'll be Ron calling from St. Louis. Ron, go ahead, but make it quick, please.
The first thing I wanted to say, they should have never called it the Ferguson Commission. It should have been called the St. Louis area commission, because it kind of takes away from the responsibility that all these other municipalities that have worse statistics than Ferguson has. And the second thing, I guess, since she works for the president or the Department of Justice, when you look at our justice system, the incarceration rate of African Americans is 6 to 7 times that of the rest of the population. So I don't see how the Justice Department can come in and help with the president create a commission when they have an incarceration rate that's 6 to 7 times for African Americans of the population. And then the movement went from hands up, don't shoot, which the Justice Department says really wasn't true. And so to me, the whole protest in that aspect was false, down to the traffic tickets, which we do, everyone understands that there is a miscarriage of justice a lot of times with these parking tickets. But even in Ferguson, it's only 20% above the norm for the rest of the population. But you got a justice system that put this commission together that has an incarceration rate for felony convictions of 6 times the population.
Let's get a response to that. You've got a lot of stuff going there. Let's get Brittany's response.
Sure. Well, I don't work for the Justice Department. I have had the privilege to work with them in the task force. I have lots of people that have been involved with this Ferguson work. And I agree with you, right? This is an issue for the entire region. Quite honestly, it's an issue for the entire country, right? Because we know we lost Mike Brown on August 9th. And since then, we've lost 6 others to police-involved shootings in St. Louis. And we have also lost Tamir Rice in Ohio, a 12-year-old. We've lost Ezell Ford in Los Angeles. We know about the situation, losing Eric Garner even before Mike Brown in Staten Island in New York. And so most certainly we have to pay attention to this issue, because those are real people that had real futures. And the undue aggressiveness that we see of policing in some of our communities has direct ties to our criminal justice system, right? When we are making and forcing law enforcement officers to treat very petty crimes like they are major crimes, we see this kind of thing continue to persist. And so that work has to happen everywhere. But certainly those systems are propped up not just at the federal level, but at all levels. And so we need to make sure that our voices are heard in all levels of government on this.
We only have a few seconds left. Antonio French was here yesterday, the alderman from St. Louis, and he was expressing some concern that as the weather gets warmer and with this distrust at the level it is between civilians and police, there could be trouble ahead. Do you see it that way?
I see a community of people both from Ferguson and from St. Louis and from beyond who have come together in love for one another and in love for our children to say enough is enough, but to say so peacefully and to say so in a way that will really affect change. I think that if we have faith and trust that that will continue to happen, then we can ensure that that prophecy fulfills itself. And then if we participate with one another in a way that respects each other, doesn't condescend, and that helps to work together toward progress, we can see that progress and that peace.
Let's end this discussion on that note. Brittany Packin, thank you so much for being with us.
Brittany,
of course, is the executive director of Teach for America here in St. Louis. That's just one of her jobs. She's also on the Ferguson Commission and the president's task force on 21st century policing. Thank you so much, Brittany.
Thank you, Don.
Up next, mediation and how we might use it to help solve community issues. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.